From WXXI News, this is Weekend Connections, the podcast. I'm Evan Dawson.
And I'm Megan Mack. And we're gearing up for the holiday weekend by having a podcast that has a lot of heavy issues in it. I'm just looking at our script, and we had a very productive week on the show, I think.
Yeah, but I agree, and probably good to open with a quick disclaimer on the first part. The opening part of this podcast contains some crude language, and it might not be appropriate for children. It's related to a conversation we had about sexual assault, which was sparked by a presentation given during a freshman orientation at RIT. Now, one of the dozens of slides included the Disney character Roo from Winnie the Pooh, and the text said Roo, R-O-O, rub one out. The caption below said, "Self-gratification can prevent sexual assault."
A student attending that talk took a screenshot and posted it to Twitter, and that led to heated discussions about how sexual assault is taught on campus. Critics say the image sent the wrong message, but RIT says it was taken out of context. We invited a representative from RIT to explain that context during the program. In this clip, you'll hear Darcy Lane Williams, director of the Center for Women and Gender at RIT. She says the goal of the talk was to teach students about the meaning of consent.
We want to make sure that our incoming freshmen are prepared for situations they might encounter. And we know that comprehensive sexual education is not available to many of our students. In addition, a lot of families don't talk to their young people about sex. And so what happens is they come to school, they're put in adult situations with minimal supervision, and they're asked to navigate these situations with no understanding. And so we didn't want to have your typical program about rape. We actually told students at the beginning, we're not going to talk to you about rape. We're going to talk to you about consent. Everyone knows that rape is wrong. We've all watched enough Law and Order SVU to know that rape is wrong. We want to talk to you about, what do you do when you're in a situation with a partner where you're trying to figure out what's going on? What are they communicating to you? What are you communicating to them? How do you get consent? How do you give consent? We find that the majority of students are not prepared for the situations they find themselves in on both sides. And so this program was designed to cover all of the Title IX topics, not just sexual assault, but also harassment, stalking, and dating violence. And so it was an interactive program. We had approximately 2,800 students there. And one of the segments, we talked about what consent may look like when you don't have a clear yes and when you don't have a clear no, and what's the yellow in between look like. And so prior to that slide in question popping up, we talked about apps that students meet each other on, like Grindr and Tinder, where you might get a little keyboard courage and start talking about all the things you're going to do with this other person. And then you get in a room and maybe things change. We talked about how consent can be withdrawn at any time. And even if someone has, you know, gone into details about what's going to happen, once you get in a room with that person, you need to get consent at that time. There are no guarantees and no one owes you anything. And so that slide out of context is very confusing. But it's important to mention that we have live captioning at all of our programs, and because we have a large population of deaf and hard of hearing students, so we want to make sure all of our programs are accessible. And so at that point in time when that photo was taken, that was live captioning, real-time captioning of what was being said at the time. And what was being said at the time is, if you're with a partner and your partner has decided to stop whatever it is that you have agreed upon to do, that you do not pressure that partner. You stop and you leave. And if you find that you are still in a position where you want to do something sexually, then you do something sexually alone. And it is not your partner's responsibility for your sexual gratification. So that is the context that was missing for that slide.
Okay. Was it a mistake at all?
I guess if we had to do it over again, we might use a different image. But I don't think we would take away the acronym. We need to give students tools to use when they leave. And traditionally, our sexual assault prevention education programs have consisted of a survivor coming in telling their story. And not to dismiss any survivor stories, we know that they are impactful. But when you're dealing with young people, you have to reach them where they're at. And so we would have a survivor come in and tell a story about what happened to them. And the students would leave thinking, wow, that was really horrible what happened to them. I'll make sure that's not me. That wouldn't be me. And for, you know, they're going to look at the person that committed this act as, well, that's a rapist. Of course, that's what rapists do. And the students are leaving with no more tools than they walked in the door with. And that's not effective. We need to give the students tools they can use in real life situations.
Do you endorse the idea that self-gratification can prevent sexual assault?
No. And like I said, it was taken, I believe it was taken out of context. What we're saying is your own sexuality, you are responsible for. No partner is responsible for your...
They don't owe you anything.
They don't owe you anything. And I don't care if you've got a text message where the person goes from A to Z what they're going to do with you. They have the right to change their mind. And honestly, one of the common rape myths we hear from both people that have been assaulted as well as people that have assaulted people is that once you get started, you know, it's too late to go back. And that is not the case. There needs to be active consent for every part of the sexual experience. From, you know, as people say, soup to nuts, there needs to be active consent the entire time. And you can't assume that anything is okay if you're not communicating with your partner.
Next, a new poverty report reveals staggering information about racial disparities when it comes to prosperity in our area. The report is called Hard Facts, and it was released by ACT Rochester and the Rochester Area Community Foundation. It shows that African Americans and Latino residents in the 9-county Rochester region fare much worse than their white counterparts when it comes to everything from health and education to wages and home ownership.
Ed Doherty is the author of that report. He says the results of the report mimic the definition of structural racism. He joined us in studio to discuss that and how solutions like diversifying our workforce are in our grasp.
Probably the most popular definition that's used is the one that comes from the Aspen Institute. Now, I'll just read it. A system in which public policies, institutional practices, cultural representations, and other norms work in various, often reinforcing ways to perpetuate racial group inequity. And so I think that what we're saying here is given these inequities, it seems inevitable that we have a significant issue of structural racism. There are other forms of racism. There's the individual racism that people engage in when they make generalities, they make decisions at hiring. And I've heard some of these over my career. I mean, there's plenty of individual racism out there. I've heard them. We don't need to hire another African American. We have one. That kind of thing sounds almost mild, but think about what the impact of a statement like that really is.
Doesn't sound mild to me.
Right, exactly. And institutional racism, which is where racism is sort of reinforced by institutional policies, practices, and realities. Very significant. Anything that, you know, if you have inequity and you have systems that maintain the status quo, then those systems will, by definition, become forms of institutional racism. I'm talking about things like everything from seniority rules to civil service rules to all manner of things that are built into our system that frequently preclude people of color to be able to advance and fully take advantage of the economy of our society.
All right. So if we're going to find a way to make, you know, diversity of employment happen, encouraging, as you told City Newspaper, system-wide diversity of employment. You know, if you were called in to consult with a company that really wanted to do it intentionally, mm-hmm. and not mm-hmm. just do it in a way that is this perfunctory, we're trying to check a box.
Right.
We really care about this, which also means management, executive-level mm-hmm. decision-making, real diversity at every level. Where can we start?
Well, okay, start with information and data, okay? If, in fact, your management team is representative of what our local market says it should be in terms of its representation of people of color, then you're done. Don't worry about this so much. Now, I say that because very, very few
almost no one is
will, in fact, find that.
Right.
So the opposite's true. If it's not, then you're, in essence, discriminating. Even though you don't feel like you're discriminating, you are, because you should be representative of the data that you can collect that shows where you ought to be in terms of representation in our local market. The next thing is, if you do have that data and you truly want to make a change in how you operate, you got to get your management team on board. They've got to see why this is important, why it's valuable, why it's a good thing to do, not just for society, but for your company's long-term viability, for your ability to meet customer needs, for your ability to improve the local economy, frankly.
And there's data that supports that, right?
There's a ton of data that supports that. And again, I have personal experience with following an approach like this. Unfortunately, it was called affirmative action. And everybody misunderstands affirmative action, and they think that it means something different, generally. They see it as meaning quotas and so forth, whereas affirmative action actually, in its essence, an affirmative action system means figuring out where you are, setting your goals, and figuring out what affirmative actions you will take to meet those goals.
At what age are kids ready to have conversations about inclusion and people who look different from them? Librarians at the Irondequoit Public Library say it's never too early. That's why they've created United Stories of America. It's a new storytime series for preschoolers, and it has a social justice theme. Presenters include a drag queen talking about gender identity, a disability rights activist, and a Muslim immigrant.
And during our discussion, we heard from a first-time caller who wanted to share how she started talking to her son about race. Her name is Mildred, and here she is explaining the conversations she had with her son, beginning when he was 6.5 months old.
I'm an African-American woman, and I have a son who's 25 now, but his dad is not African-American. He is not black. And I would, if I'd been away from my kid, you know, like all day or something, I would, when I saw him, I'd say, "How's my baby? How's my beautiful black boy?" And finally, his dad said, "Why do you say that?" And forgive me, folks, but I'm going to tell you exactly how I answered him, because he has to hear it while it's a good thing before the world starts calling him a nigger. I, you know, don't love that word, but it was like an inoculation. And I think it's important, because the world squashes our children, and we have to let them know they're okay. Not only are they okay, they're fab.
Absolutely. And so, Mildred, you started talking to your son about that when he was, again, about 6 months old?
6.5 months old, yes.
6.5 months old. And did you feel over time, how have you felt about that over time?
I think it was good. I think it was useful. I think it helped him. And because he's technically biracial, you know, people are always trying to put him in a category. He knows he's fabulous. He knows he's wonderful, and he identifies black. And that's not bad, and that's not good. It just is, and we're wonderful, and we love everybody.
Yeah, you know, Mildred, I remember just a couple days ago, my son and I were talking, and he's 5.5, and I often say to him, you know, you're not better than anybody based on, you know, differences, how tall you are, and, mm-hmm. you know, what kind of baseball player you are, whatever. You're not better than anybody as a person. And then the other night he said, Dad, why do you always say this? You know, like he's asking me.
They're brilliant.
You know, yeah, and so I feel like he's opening the door for me to go deeper soon, but it's hard as a parent to know when that right moment is, if that makes sense.
Well,
what do you think?
You know, I feel like when it came to the whole physical stuff, sex, I don't believe in answering any question that a kid can't formulate, number one. Saves me a lot of embarrassment. And number two, don't tell your kid anything that can't be sung at the top of their lungs in the Wegmans parking lot. they'll let you know. They'll let you know.
Here's a nice way to kick off your weekend. Some good news for the future of the planet, as long as we take it to heart. New research coming out of the University of Rochester shows the human impact on climate change could be greater than we previously thought. Okay, that doesn't sound like good news, but the positive is that it's not too late in the fight against global warming.
University of Rochester paleoclimatologist Vas Petrenko spent months in Antarctica studying 12,000-year-old ice cores. That ancient ice reveals important information about the amounts of methane in the environment. Petrenko and his team discovered that the risk of global warming triggering a release of natural methane is low. and that humans are contributing about 25% more methane to the atmosphere than scientists previously thought. So here's what we mean about good news. We're in control, kind of. If we reduce our use of fossil fuels, we can really curb climate change maybe more than we thought. Here's Petrenko discussing his findings.
We were after the question of, can global warming trigger the release of a huge amount of methane into the atmosphere from these old carbon stores like methane hydrates? And the answer that we found, at least for that time period, is no. So for that time period, it did not happen. So methane went up in the atmosphere during the end of the last ice age as the world was warming up, and it went up quite rapidly during this abrupt large warming event in the North Atlantic that I was talking about. But our data are showing that it was emissions from wetlands, so natural emissions from wetlands, rather than from these giant carbon stores like methane hydrates. And another one that people have been concerned about is permafrost, because permafrost has a similarly large amount of carbon stored in it. And as the permafrost thaws, a lot of this carbon might be available for producing methane and releasing methane into the atmosphere. And so our study showed that at that time, that did not happen. So it's not a perfect analog to what is happening today, but it shows that this kind of event is less likely. So we don't need to be as concerned about this type of methane release. On the flip side, what it showed is that the releases of fossil methane from natural sources were very low during this entire period. And fossil methane today is being released from in two different ways. So it is being released naturally because these areas that have large amounts of fossil fuel deposits always have a little bit of seepage. And this seepage comes out, you know, if it's on land, it could be literally methane seeping from the ground. There could be these really neat features called mud volcanoes, which bubble mud, and part of the gas that's emitted is methane. Some of these methane seeps are also underwater, and you will see these off the coast of Santa Barbara, for example. You can see methane bubble plumes rising from the floor of the ocean. But the rest of fossil methane emission to the atmosphere today is from our activities. What we can do today with studies in the atmosphere is have a pretty good handle on how much those two are combined, so the natural fossil emissions plus human-caused fossil emissions. But we can't really separate them today because this is the same exact type of methane. And in terms of methane isotopes, so isotopes are just atoms with slightly different mass, but chemically they're still the same. And we can use those to basically fingerprint the different sources of methane. In terms of these isotopes, these two are identical, so we can't really separate them in that way. What we found is that the natural source is much smaller than it was previously thought. What that means by extension is that the human-made source is considerably larger than previously thought. So we're suggesting that we emit more methane into the atmosphere from our extraction and use of fossil fuels than what was previously believed. And like Peter said, this means that our potential to reduce these global warming emissions is even larger than we thought.
Does that make you more of an optimist in any way?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, this first reduces the study is reducing the risk. Well, it's showing that the risk associated with these catastrophic methane releases from natural old carbon stores is low. It's also saying that let's not worry about these natural carbon stores as much, but we can really do something by focusing on our emissions from fossil fuel extraction and use.
And that's another edition of Weekend Connections, the podcast. You can hear Connections every weekday afternoon from noon to 2 on WXXI AM 1370, WRUR 88.5 FM, and WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM.
We're also on the WXXI mobile app. Have a great holiday weekend, everyone. We will talk to you on Tuesday.